Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my sweet friends. I hope today finds you well. I hope this moment finds you well. How are you? My name is Nicole, and this is my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Welcome to our time together. I'm always so happy and just like chill. Like when I sit down to do this, I just feel my most connected and my most chill, just being with you guys. It's just a wonderful gift for me. So I hope it's a gift for you as well. I have so much to share with you today. So let's get right to it. First of all, I'm about to participate in something that you really might be interested in. So I signed on a couple months ago to something that Dr. David Hanscom is doing, and it's in concert with the Open Center in New York City, and he's doing the second annual Chronic Pain Summit, a weekend on dynamic healing. Now, sometimes these things are focused only toward medical professionals, but this year it's focused toward everyone. And I'm looking at the flyer right now and the amount of people that are coming to and the topics that are being shared in this summit are incredible. And I'm so grateful and honored to have been asked to be part of it. So it's February 26th and 27th. And the first day of the conference, the theme is physiology of threat, which is so fascinating, guys. Anyone who's doing this work knows that the nervous system, when it's dysregulated, feels that we are in a state of being threatened. And that is what causes so much chronic illness and symptoms and syndromes and diagnoses and conditions and discomfort and low energy and the symptoms of autoimmune disease and so much of what we talk about here. So the first day of this conference is going to be the physiology of threat, and just so many interesting topics. I'll just read off a couple. What is dynamic healing? Co-regulation, cues of safety versus threat, the link between the autonomic nervous system and mental health, the intersection of metabolic and mental health, why does rejection hurt, and the way our neural circuitry connects to physical and social pain. This is such fascinating stuff. And if you are really interested in diving deeper into the science behind this, this is a really, really great opportunity for you. And then the second day that I am involved in, which is the 27th, so it's a two-day conference, and it will be recorded for everyone. So if you can't, you know, be there on the day, that's fine. The theme is mental control perpetuates the body's threat response. Also, so fascinating. And so on that day, I will be presenting in the afternoon, and the topic of my discussion will be how expressive writing creates safety. And I am followed by Bruce Lipton, and his topic is letting go. So the fact that I am being followed by Bruce Lipton, hello, like hashtag dreams coming true. So, and there's so much other stuff going on that day, the role of unconscious feelings and anxiety in pain experiences and behavior, minimizing the time and threat physiology. Let's see what else. Pain reprocessing therapy. It's a great conference. So what I'm going to do is if you want to participate in this, I'm going to put the link to sign up for this conference on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, on both the resources and the retreats tab. I'm super excited to be part of it, and I just know. And we're also doing a live Q&A. Every single speaker after they're done is doing a live Q&A, so I will be there answering questions and also presenting, and so many other interesting people. So that's one thing I had to say to you. I keep forgetting to announce that on this podcast, and it's like I want people to know that this is available to them, because as we move forward with this mind-body healing stuff, so many more offerings are taking place. And it's really exciting. You know, I basically rarely have an opportunity to discuss it because I'm not always involved in absolutely everything and my life is so busy, but these opportunities are building and building, and this one I'm actually involved in. So I wanted to share that with you. So that's the first thing I definitely wanted to share. The second thing I wanted to share, I mentioned this last week, but people are asking me a lot of questions about the April retreat in Boone, North Carolina at the Art of Living Retreat Center and this giveaway I'm doing. So I'm going to kind of clarify it here. I am giving away one free one-hour session with me to everyone who signs up between the beginning. So if you've signed up already, you're entered through March 1st at midnight. So if you sign up to go to that retreat, which is April 8th through the 10th at the Art of Living Retreat Center in Boone, North Carolina, first of all, you're in for such a treat. The place looks incredible. And I'm going to be there along with Lisa Schlossberg and Caroline Dewey, potentially Danielle First. And it is going to be just an incredible weekend. I mean, you guys, I'm beyond. First of all, we get to be in the mountains together. The place is sick. And we're going to do this weekend of incredible healing. And also, if you sign up before March 1st, you'll be entered to win this free one-hour session with me that we will do, this is one of the questions, on the phone or on Zoom together prior to the retreat. So you will have already spent that time with me, know like everything you want to know from your questions and share your story with me prior. So that's going to be given out to one person who wins that. And I will be announcing the winner on March 2nd. And it will be, I will not announce your name unless you want your name announced. That was another question. Some people want their name announced, some people don't. But if you want me to, I'll announce your name. If not, I'll just announce that the winner has been chosen on my podcast and on my social media, Instagram. If you are not following me on Instagram, that's where I do most of my announcing, at Nicole Sachs LCSW on Instagram. So go over there and get connected with our community there. I'm also going to be doing an Instagram live this coming week, answering people's questions about the 28-day challenge that's been going on my Facebook group, which is Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs on Facebook. So much exciting stuff is going on. Look out on my Facebook group. If you haven't joined, click over there and click on Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs. You'll have to answer some membership questions, and then one of my admins will admit you. And also look at my Instagram for announcements of when the lives are and when the Q&As are, because I'm really moving full force into inviting in the spring and all the exciting offerings. And of course, my Omega retreat, which is April 7th through the 12th, is open for enrollment as well. If you want to come spend a week with us with a super, super deep dive in rural New York, upstate New York, Rhinebeck, New York. It's amazing and beautiful. Okay. I'm almost done with announcements, and I hope you guys aren't skipping this because there's so much to be had by understanding all the ways you can help yourself and involve yourself in the community. Last thing I want to say, I've been getting such incredible feedback, specifically also involving long COVID, because this episode is on long COVID, about the Curable app. So people are telling me, Nicole, it is changing and saving my life to have found you, to have been doing your work, taking your course, and working through my fear and understanding the way my nervous system has been dysregulated and causing all these long COVID symptoms, and having the Curable app in my hand on my phone every day in order to solidify and strengthen this work that I'm always doing. So people, just understand, I love the Curable app. It's a sponsor of this podcast. It's an app that you download on your phone and you have it with you all the time. They delve deeply into the brain science, deeply into many different modalities of healing. There are guided meditations. There are writing exercises. There are ways to involve yourself in the Curable community, and it is incredibly impactful. I probably hear as much about Curable and people writing to thank me or to ask me questions or to share their story than I hear about my work. It's always, I did your work and then I did Curable, or I found you through Curable, or I found Curable through you. So if you are interested in figuring out if Curable works for you in sampling it yourself, just go over to www.getcurable.com/Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, and you will get 2 weeks free of the entire app. You can try the entire thing. And 2 weeks is a really long time to begin changing a habit in your life and making a healthy habit in your life. And it's 2 full weeks free. So go over and take advantage of that. Okay, announcements over. So today we're going to talk to Jessica. And Jessica's story is one of many long COVID stories I am receiving, which is incredible, guys. You know, I think the fear around long COVID may be the most upsetting and the biggest fear story I've heard in a really long time. This does not mean that long COVID is created only by fear. Long COVID is a physical condition. Like we always talk about mind-body stuff on this podcast. It is real. You're not making it up. It is absolutely happening in your body. And I am starting to hear from hundreds, I might even be able to say at this point, thousands of people writing to me that because they found my work through interviews I'm doing, through different things I've been writing and producing about long COVID, they found my work. And even though those symptoms are totally physical, they realized through doing my work that the symptoms have all gone away or alleviated tremendously to the point where they're completely back in their lives. And the reason is because the symptoms, although physical, were completely being generated by the nervous system dysregulation and the sustained long-term stress and fight and fight or flight and collective terror over this condition. And once they were able to calm the nervous system, allow the repressed feelings to rise that involved COVID, but also many things before COVID, because a lot of people, and you'll hear about this from Jessica, realized that prior to their long COVID, they had a lot of TMS symptoms that they didn't realize, because many of us that carry these symptoms have these personalities that are perfectionistic and goodist and wanting to be approved of and codependent and sensitive. And that's okay. That's how we are. I'm like that. That's how we are, but it also tends to create a lot of fertile ground for things like long COVID and many, many other chronic illnesses, diagnoses, conditions, symptoms, syndromes. So today is a story of a beautiful recovery from long COVID. Jessica's energy is so great, and she had so much to deal with because she got COVID super early in the pandemic. When there was so much uncertainty and terror and meaning attached to what it meant to have COVID, and God knows what we all thought would happen to us and to the world. And in many cases, it has happened. In many cases, to some people, it has been not as scary as they thought. But right back then, we had no idea. It was all blatant uncertainty, and uncertainty is pretty much the most tender place for the nervous system to be, the most defensive place for the nervous system to be. So that is where Jessica's story begins. So I love sharing these long COVID stories because I want to continue to inspire you that you are not in a jail. You are holding the key. The door can swing open anytime you choose to pause and take in this information with love and kindness for yourself. I come with an open heart and I give with an open hand. I just want you to be better. So I send you big love and enjoy this chat I had with Jessica. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the pod. Today, I have a conversation with Jessica. So she contacted me regarding long haul COVID. And although I am pretty picky lately about wanting to not do the same topic a lot, I have to be honest, I don't think we can talk enough about the symptoms of long-haul COVID or what are being labeled as the symptoms of long-haul COVID and how they relate to stress illness and the mind-body connection and neuroplastic pain and whatever, however you want to qualify this situation. So welcome, Jessica. Thank you for being willing to share your story.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Jessica, tell me what happened and how did the journey go?
Well, first I want to say when you first reached out or when we first connected and you were asking if my story was a success story or a real-time heal, it was like perfect timing. It was like, this is actually a success story because for so long I was thinking I could be a real-time heal on her podcast. And those episodes helped me so much at the beginning, but I just knew that it was a success. So I'm happy that that's the case.
Awesome.
The COVID journey for me, it started in April of 2020. And of course, as you've heard many times, that was just like the height of the beginning of,
yes,
you know, the fear and everything around it. And in hindsight, I feel is always 2020. But looking back, there were some other stressful things going on in my life at the time. My family had just moved across country, like across states, and we were in a rental home and we were looking for a new home to purchase. And I was in between jobs. And the job thing, I mean, these are both like normal stressful things for people. But I think for me, it was just more for me than an average person because of my TMS personality, right? And the job thing especially, because that was just, I have always put so much of my like self-esteem and validation has always come from my job.
Right. And when just, you say your TMS personality, what is that for you?
So it's a bunch of different things that I, you know, I learned about later on and I'm so grateful for. But for me, it's perfectionism, it's hypervigilance, it's, you know, wanting to be seen as doing a good job, you know, wanting to be just a good friend, you know, a kind person. Those are the main things. And the other thing that's sort of like a darker side of it is that I realized through this whole journey was not really being able to rest, not knowing how to rest.
Yes, that's a big one.
Yeah, not really even understanding how to do that. And I'll share more of how that came up in my journey. But that's just sort of the backdrop for what's going on when the pandemic hits. And so, of course, when it hits, like my job search just gets completely frozen. And like I said, I was just so focused on that. And it was like a stress point in my marriage. But it was really like a stress point for me personally. And so that we actually closed on a house and knew that we were going to move right as this is all ramping up. And we were, of course, terrified of like, you know, precautions and everything. I live right down the street from the CDC. So like, I'm well aware of, and my husband works in the ER physician industry. So like, we have extra information about everything. So we're being super careful. So as a result, I end up basically moving almost our entire house by myself from the rental to the new house in my SUV, like over a period of 5 days. And I'm just like overdoing everything. Like, you know, I packed everything, I moved everything because we want to limit our time with movers. And it was to the point where when they actually moved, it was only like two beds and a sofa.
Oh, right. I mean, because in COVID, you didn't want too many strangers, yeah, or just too many people.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It got was it. That, it was that like fear level plus me like completely overworking my body into, you know, oblivion. So the day after we moved in our house is when I started having COVID symptoms.
Oh,
and I knew immediately that that's what it was because I had never felt anything like this before. You know, I've had the flu, I've had colds, I've had everything we've all had. And this was just not like any of that. So I knew that that's what it was. And looking back now, like I was such a fearful mess about it. Like I was trying to stay calm, but I was quarantined and I was
and
just,
everybody was a fearful mess. My God. Yeah. I mean, like the thought of being in that, just bringing ourselves back to that time frame, we were washing mm-hmm. our groceries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was beyond, right?
Yeah. It was beyond.
So that's where I was in my little quarantine room. And of course, like on paper, I had a relatively mild case. Like people were in the hospital and stuff. And that wasn't me. It was, quote, mild COVID. And I was, you know, I very much wanted to know as much as I could about it. So, you know, my husband was talking to our friends who are ER physicians about like, what should we be looking for? And is this okay? Is this normal? And they were all very reassuring, which was nice at the time. So after my quarantine session ended, it was, you know, I didn't have my fever anymore. And it was like, it's okay to come out. I come out, my house is a total wreck because, you know, my husband's doing the best he can. and I'm quarantined in it. We have a 10-year-old. So there's a huge pile of stuff that has to go to Goodwill. And the Goodwills were going to close the next day, like indefinitely because of the pandemic.
Right.
So in my mind, I'm like, I can do this. I can just take this one, you know, load of stuff to Goodwill. And I was really in no position to even be driving a car. Like I was still just fatigued and my body was trying to fight off
the
virus.
Of course. Yeah.
But this is just illustrating like how I operated in the world and how I had up till that point gotten away with it. So I get in the car, I go to Goodwill, I drop everything off. I'm driving home and I had this, I call it a heart episode, but it felt like a heart attack or what that would feel like. Whereas my whole like left side of my body radiating out from my heart just was in so much pain and my whole left arm went numb and it was like up my neck, my back. It was like while I was driving. Happening.
That's terrifying.
It was so terrifying that I actually had to have EMDR in February to like get over that event, which totally helped, by the way, and I'll get to that. But I was so scared and I called my husband, and this is another like TMS thing, but I uncovered in EMDR that actually calling him and asking for help was almost as terrifying to me as the actual physical event. Like that's how afraid I was to like ask for help or, you know, bother anyone.
Oh, right. That's old stuff.
Yeah, it was old stuff. It was how I had always operated. And in this moment where I need help more than anything, I'm like worried about that, you know, like deep down. I didn't realize that at the time, but that was just adding to my fear. And the pain was real. I mean, it was super scary. And so I went home and sort of just breathed and survived through it. I mean, there was no way to really go to a hospital during that time either, unless you were like on death's door. So I just sort of like, you know, hoped and prayed through the night because it was still hurting after that. And that sort of episode kicked off my long COVID, I'll call it, which was mostly, I mean, I can list off all the symptoms, but the main one was pain around my heart. And it was sort of intermittent gnawing pain all day long, on and off every minute. And at night, it was like a shooting pain where I would like be afraid to lay down and go to sleep because I thought I was going to die.
Now, and that went obviously that's like super, super traumatic. I imagine you did. I imagine you got some tests on your heart. Yes.
So at the time, it was like, that, you know, obviously that's what I wanted to do, but the whole like getting an appointment with a doctor at that time was just impossible. And so, but I did start that process. Of course, I like called my GP and I was like, I'm having major issues with this COVID stuff. And I got an appointment with him and he was like, I have no idea how to help you, basically. And he did refer me to a cardiologist, which was amazing. And what I, you know, one of the things that really helped me to get peace of mind, because I finally got an in-person appointment with a cardiologist in August. So this happened in April and I was able to see a cardiologist in August and I was still having daily pain at that point. But I want to back up because that summer, another thing happened sort of externally that gave me some help, which was I found a support group of other people with long COVID online. And that was really helpful to me at the time because it at least made me feel like I wasn't alone in this because it was so isolating to not have anybody to talk about it with and like your doctor to be like, I don't have a clue. And I'm having all kinds of other weird symptoms on top of the heart stuff. So just having that group of, you know, like-minded COVID sufferers, but it was helpful in that regard, but it was also probably not the greatest thing because you're on this message board every day. Like,
yeah, it can go either way. It can go either way with the support groups that are specific to symptoms. Yeah. It can go either way.
But I did need that at the time, I think, just to get through the night because the, you know how usually when you're sick, the best thing you can do is like get in bed and kind of rest. Like with this illness, that wasn't comfortable. That wasn't comforting. And there was no thing that I way that I could escape from it. It was like there was no pill. There was no like, so basically I was taking sleeping pills almost every night just to try to knock myself out, because the only time I didn't have pain was when I was asleep or when I was in a hot bath. So I would take a hot bath like twice a day and a hot shower and sleep as much as possible with help from medication.
It's so crazy because, like, I know you know now, but in mm-hmm. retrospect, you can see how TMS that is. You know, if you had a structural abnormality that was the result of something that would only go away if it was manipulated physically, there's no way that it would leave when you were in a hot bath and when you were asleep. Exactly. You know, like, this is the thing that I think people need to sort of, you know, you never know what's going to wake someone up when they're listening to a podcast. So I like to point these things out when people say them, because if this is going on for you, this is a great way to understand that this is involved with your nervous system dysregulation and your mind-body system, because it's only then, like, for some reason you felt safe in a hot bath and you felt safe when you were asleep with medication, and those two things were what allowed the symptoms to relax during those times.
Yes, there's so many things that I could illustrate that I knew it was TMS once I found out what it was. Another one was looking back, like when I was sort of doing a few interviews for part-time work before all this happened, and I would be driving to the interview and I would have pain in my heart. It wasn't like, of course, what I felt with COVID, but it was like little, you know, indication, something's in my chest, like I need to calm down. Like it was sort of telling me, oh, Jess, you're really nervous about this interview or something. So that is kind of telling to me, like there was already some, like my brain could go to my heart and be like, this area is kind of weak, you know, I'm gonna go here. So to me, that was another thing, like that was happening before I even got COVID.
And I also want to point out to people, because it's such a specifically terrifying symptom to have pain mm-hmm. Where your heart is, mm-hmm. that oftentimes, and I need to be very careful when I say this, first of all, I'm not a doctor. Second of all, I never propose that anyone should do this work without getting checked out, because God forbid mm-hmm. you have a heart condition. You got to know that. But once you get checked out and once you understand that there's nothing physically wrong with your heart that requires either medication or a surgery, I have seen countless times, and this is way before COVID-19 was even a thing, for the last 20 years, of people with unexplained chest pain. And it's kind of the way people say when they're having a panic attack, they feel like they're having a heart attack and they end up in the ER, and then the doctors check them out and say, well, it's anxiety. People need to know that even though it is so physical and even though the pain is real, chest pain that is not explained from other physical causes is TMS. It is mind-body, it is stress-related, and it has everything to do with this work. So never count that out if that's something that's happening to you.
Absolutely. And that's, of course, what it was. But when I finally got an appointment in person with a cardiologist, I can tell you that was the second thing, like after the message board, that really gave me hope. Because it was like, oh my God, somebody's going to listen to me about my specific organ that is being affected. I'm going to get some kind of support here from someone outside of myself, which is I really needed at the time, you know. And actually, when I got the call from the nurse about the appointment, it's the first time that I kind of broke down emotionally. I had been so frozen up until that point, my nervous system, that I hadn't even had an emotion. And I cried a little bit in the car. It still wasn't what I needed to feel, which came much later, but it was like something, like kind of breaking open my heart a little bit, so to speak, you know. And I went to the cardiologist and he checked me out and he was really great. And he actually, his brother was kind of having some issues. So it was like somebody understood finally, you know. And of course, I had an echo and I had my blood work done and all that, and it was all fine. And that was a huge relief, but also, well, what the hell's wrong with me? You know, because I'm still having pain every single day that's coming and going. And I couldn't figure out like a rhyme or reason to it. And I knew it had been so long since I'd had COVID, like this shouldn't still be going on. And it was more than just my chest pain. It was all kinds of weird stuff going on in my body. It felt like literally an alien was inside of me. It was like cosmically strange. And so many other people with COVID have explained, you know, described the same thing. And like,
the only reason I'm laughing is because I feel like I sit, this is my entire life, as I hear from people about how their symptoms manifest. And I don't think I've ever heard somebody say it felt like I had an alien going on inside of me. So thank you for, you know, just adding another one to my bucket.
Yes, absolutely. Of course. So sort of the next thing that fell into my lap, like I'm just sort of highlighting along my journey here in the part before I found you, what kind of things were coming across to help me? And I kind of, I'm like sort of a spiritual woo-woo person. So I feel like these things are sort of like the universe is bringing them to me in some way, right? For whatever reason. And so the next thing was, I just sort of connected with this energy healer. And I did like a Zoom session because I'm pretty desperate at this point. And I'm like, okay, the doctor can't help me. I don't know what pill to take for this. I will try anything.
Also, Jessica, just FYI, I live for that shit. Okay. Judge it if you will, whomever is listening.
Yeah.
I love energy healers. I love anything that brings in, because to me, and I just have recently said this on another podcast, whatever you want to call God or spirit or energy or the universe, my biggest thing is it's not me. You know, like I am not the one who is, you know, making things happen. And so if that's the case, I love it tapping into sort of the familial feeling of what is, which is this great energy that we all live in. I love it.
Yes. And just like what, maybe it's your higher self or your spirit, like whatever you want to call it, but it's like, yes, that part. So it was the first time I'd ever had a session with an energy healer, but I was totally open at this point. And I'll say the big thing that I got out of that was, okay, I need to rest. That's kind of the message that came across. And I knew that I wasn't actually doing it. Like I would be laying down in bed. I could be laying in bed all day, but I was not like resting with intention. Like I wasn't giving myself permission. I was still worrying around in my head, you know? But I didn't know how to fix it. I didn't know how to rest. So I became even more frustrated after that in a way, because I'm still sick. I still have pain. I know that I'm not doing this thing I need to do for myself, but I don't know how to do it. So after that, I kind of like started my decline to rock bottom, I'll say. And that was like from like October to Christmas. And right around Christmas, you know, I could feel like the depression coming on, Nicole. And it was like, but at least I was feeling something, because before that, like I said, I was frozen with the alien inside, and now it was turning into this dark, dark, like depression is the only word I could say. And it started to kind of break open around Christmas, because I remember I started to cry a lot. And it was like, it was always triggered by my pain, but I knew somehow intuitively that it was a different kind of sadness that it needed to come out, but it really scared me. Because I'd be sitting on the floor in my bathroom crying for like over an hour hysterically, and like not knowing where to turn or what to think, or the thoughts that were coming up were just, I didn't want to feel that, you know. It was like, oh my God, what is happening to me? There's something wrong with me. And this went on for several weeks. And another thing I'll say, that I'm only saying this because I really want people to know, and hopefully it'll help somebody, but I never was like ideation of suicide or having suicidal thoughts. But what I'll say is I can understand why people do. Like I felt like I crossed over some bridge where I was like, oh, now I understand what that feels like. Like I was in that place where people go.
Right.
And I had never been like that before. Like it's not that I wasn't like empathetic or didn't, you know, think that there was a good reason why people would feel that way, but I had never experienced it until then. So, you know, I shared that with my husband, and it was like, oh, and the fear of that heart attack incident was always right over my shoulder as well, like I would anticipate pain before it would come, and it was still coming like constantly. And I felt like I wasn't, I mean, I just wasn't getting better. I wasn't sure if I was getting worse or what, but I started a symptom tracker, which I've heard you talk about, like, or I've heard somewhere, like, that's not a great idea either.
I don't know if I said that, but that's the first thing I thought just now when you said it.
But I did it with this intention of like, am I getting better or what? Like, I can't figure it out. So I was trying to like learn something, I guess. And I started tracking like every day that I cried and for how long. I mean, it was ridiculous. So that was basically the beginning of rock bottom. And how I found you is I was sitting on the floor. It was in January, crying. And I actually was walking every day, Nicole, because my cardiologist had told me to do that. And of course, fatigue was a huge part of this. And the first time I walked, I could barely walk to the end of my block, literally could barely walk to the end of my block. And by this, and that was in like when I saw him in October, September. So by this point, I was actually walking about 45 minutes a day, rain or shine, slow as can be. But I was doing it because, you know, I wanted to do a good job and do what he told me. And I also knew intuitively that it was something that would be good for me to do. So I Googled chronic pain podcast, and that's how I found you. And that was the beginning of me coming out of this.
Yes. I love that so much when people just find me like that.
Yes, it was so like, I've heard it many other times. Like, it's kind of a textbook Find Nicole story, right? But oh my gosh, when I first listened, I was just like, this is what's going on with me. I was so excited. Like, I was just so hopeful, more than I had ever been at any other moment in the process. So yeah, that's how the healing part began. Well, you want me to keep going?
Yeah. Well, no, I just want to comment that's amazing because, you know, we all get lost in our fear, and most of our fear has to do with the fact we don't know what else to do. It's not like you weren't willing or open. It's mm-hmm. just that until you know the next steps, at least in the world of what I teach, until you know, you don't know. But I love that once you are open to it, you're like, okay, let's go. So tell me what happened next.
Yes, exactly. So just sort of an overarching thing that I want to say is that you're, first of all, every single thing that you said would happen in my journey happened. It was, like I said, textbook. I mean, and I've said this on the Facebook group many times when I'm trying to help other people. And every time you would tell stories about like how your symptoms will get worse before they get better and anxiety will come up once your pain starts to go down and all these different things, I never believed that would happen to me. I was like, that is not going to happen to me. Like, I thought it was going to be quick and easy, but it's a journey. It's a crooked line. It takes a while. You got to be patient. So all of that happened. Another thing I want to say is about your three parts. Just before I share my personal experience, the belief, doing the work, and patience and kindness. Doing the work was never a problem for me in my life. Like, I have been in talk therapy pretty much since I got married. You know, I've always been a person who wants to be better and work on myself. And I want to get to know myself. And, you know, I like hearing about other people and their stories. Like, I'm really just into all of that. And so journal speaking came very naturally to me. Like, that was a cinch. I'd essentially kind of already been doing that in a way. Like, just within my own mind and in therapy and just talking to people that I trusted. So doing the work was not the issue, but you did illuminate some amazing tools and things that helped me get through it, which the biggest one was probably the inner child stuff, like making that connection, which I'll share more. And then the other thing I wanted to say is the belief and the patience and kindness, hands down, are the hardest things for me. And belief being number one. And just on the surface, I think it's because my pain was in my chest, around my heart. And that's super scary, like you said. And even though, you know, I was cleared by a cardiologist, it was so hard to believe that I was okay. even after I found your work, I mean, it's still like an ongoing process. But one of
and
the
it
things,
takes and it takes
yeah.
the time it takes. And this
yes.
is something that I think also needs to be reiterated, that your nervous system stands in the way between you and certain death. That's the point of it. And so, especially in its most primitive functioning in the brainstem, the fight or flight response is to keep you alive. And so, if indeed the nervous system deems your fear and your meaning and the repressed trauma that you had to repress in order to survive this whole COVID situation and moving house and the job search, if that was deemed as a greater predator, that feeling those feelings would kill you, which even though that sounds crazy, that is the perception of our brain and our nervous system when it comes to this stuff, then protecting you meant sending those pain signals in such a way that would convince you that's what you need to think about. You think about the
yeah.
pain. You don't think about all those other things. And so it makes total sense. It makes total sense that your nervous system takes a minute when you just
yeah.
turn around. I listened to a podcast and we're fine now. And your nervous system's
yeah.
like, you're crazy. And my job is to protect you. And we're going to take a second before we decide that, you know, we're safe. Yeah. Yeah.
So it definitely started out with me like just consuming all of your content, you know, some other content that I learned about from you. It was just anything that I felt compelled to read or listen to. I was learning, I was gathering information. That was kind of phase one. And watching one of the very first things I did was watch your 4-part on YouTube about how to journal speak. And I just started doing it. I mean, like I said, that part was very easy for me. And that really unleashed the floodgate of emotions. But for me, the biggest one was sadness and grief. Just, you know, a lot of it was still kind of cosmic and I wasn't sure where it was coming from, but I started to accept it and just realize like it didn't matter. I just needed to feel it. I had never been a crier my whole life. And there was a reason why I had all of this stuck inside of me. And so I just started to allow it, you know, more and more and just let it happen. And sort of then I just started to like embrace it and look forward to it and know that who cares? I cry every day. What's the big deal? You know, I'm going through a really big thing here and this is just part of what I need to do. And there's another thing I want to share with people about the sadness that I felt. Like I said, it scared me and it was sort of cosmic feeling. There was another kind of very stressful thing going on in my life during this whole time, which was that my mom was dying of cancer. And she actually passed away in June. Thank you so much. But so she did pass away this past June. But I want to share with people that the sadness that I felt around my mom dying was nothing like the sadness I felt around my pain. It was a completely different sad. The sadness I felt about her was very comforting and understanding and almost like an uplifting, loving, like normal human sadness. You're going to be sad when your mom is sick and dying. Like that's easy for me to understand. But the
right.
sadness
it felt cleaner.
Yes, clean and just great almost for
I
lack
totally
of a better
get
word.
That. Mm-hmm. My father died suddenly when I was 27, and I remember remarking at that time about how different it felt to grieve something that it's like so obviously what it is.
Yeah. Yes. So that also was kind of another signal to me that whatever I was going through with this other weird, deep grief sadness was separate from my mom, and it was something that I had to do for me. It was in me, you know. So it just kind of motivated me further to keep going and keep trusting my instincts and just keep gathering evidence that, you know, I was going to get through this and it was the right path that I needed to be on. Even though, you know, I still, my pain went way down when I first found out about you and then it came roaring back, like I said, which I think many people experience. But if I measured my progress week to week and month to month in my mind. And I stopped keeping that tracker, by the way. But I was getting better. You know, I was on the right path. And I also was able to really start my job search. after I found your work. And I landed an amazing job, by the way, in March, my dream job. I'm doing that now.
Congratulations.
So thank you very much. But yeah, it just, you know, I just did journal speak like as long as I felt like I needed to. I wasn't concerned with how long, even though it felt like forever. And I just cried as much as I needed to. And that felt like forever too. But what I can share with people is that it will end. There is an end to it. It's not like I still don't feel those sad feelings, and you know, the anger will still come pop up here and there. And oh my God, the anxiety that I experienced, Nicole, was unlike anything I'd ever felt. Like it was, and that went on for a long time too. That was sort of after the pain started to subside. And you talk about that all the time. And that actually happened to me. Like I lived through that anxiety and it was terrible. Oh my God. I wanted to like, again, take a pill or crawl under a rock, but I just had to feel it. I just had to go through it. And eventually that subsided too. And I, you know, I was just getting better. I want to say another thing that was interesting to me about symptoms. So one of the things that I had on and off all through long COVID and when I was healing at the beginning with your work is IBS. Like it would go on for like weeks and it did not bother me because I knew it was TMS and I didn't care. But, and so eventually, and now it's completely gone and has been for a while, but like the chest pain was still bothering me. It was still, and so I was able to connect that in my mind. I'm like, you're still afraid and frustrated with the chest pain, but you don't care about the IBS. And that's why it went away faster. Like for me, it was just more proof that, yeah, the reason you're still having this is because you're afraid. It just totally connected in my mind. It doesn't mean that it made it any easier to not be afraid of. That still has to happen slowly in its own time, but it was just more evidence to me that that's what it was.
Your message is so awesome. I mean, it's exactly what I want people to understand, that we are going to experience physical manifestations of things that have emotional stimuli. We are. Trauma is experienced through the body, not because anything's wrong with you. Quite frankly, it's because your nervous system is working perfectly. Because the whole point of the nervous system is to help you manage through these difficult situations. And when it's too hard to feel, it offloads it into your body. So we are always going to experience this, but to not give it the meaning, to not give it the gravity of and the pre-grieving and what's wrong with me and the fear, oh, the fear of like what's next and what's going to happen to me and how am I going to survive this and what if I'm always like this? That's such a question. What if I'm always like this? What if I'm never better? And then all the meaning that gets attached to that, which is I'm not going to have friends. My kids aren't going to feel supported by me. My marriage is going to break up. I mean, people go to the ends of the earth as I get it. As one does when they're really afraid. So to be able to look at things and to experience them as sensations. So there's two things that we do with our pain that's really important. The first is to experience it as a sensation without giving it a judgment. And I still do this to this day. I know I'm not immune to physical symptoms because you can't be, because you wouldn't be alive. So like if I'm having a headache or if I'm having a stomach upset or something, I just experience it as a sensation. I say, wow, I'm like getting a headache today. It's so interesting. I mean, yes, I know that's heavy on my mind and, you know, that just happened. I label what's going on and I feel it as a sensation. And the other thing is I use my pain, and I know you're doing this too, as information. So I feel the sensation, then I say, I wonder what it's trying to say to me, because obviously somehow, and this is not my fault, I'm not listening right now because it's trying to express itself in other ways. So let me see, let me be curious. If I stop and listen, will it subside? And honestly, often it does. You know, whether it's that I have time to sit down and journal speak, or I just like I'm in the car and I start talking it out like a lunatic. Like a crazy person, you know, talking to myself as I drive and at the red light and whatever. I just love your message, especially around this IBS thing and just saying like, yeah, I didn't care about that. So it went, it wasn't getting me. Yeah. It wasn't doing its job. See, because when the nervous system tries to do its job and distract you, but it doesn't distract you, it stops trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And another thing I totally learned about myself was the health anxiety that I've had actually my whole life. I had been like surviving fine with it. And, you know, like I said, living okay, getting by, I guess, with all these kind of TMS traits. And now I'm just so grateful that the light that I've shined the light on this. And I'm like, oh my God, I have this really bad health anxiety. This is the thing that I've struggled with. And like, I realized the other day that I've always, always, always been surprised when I do heal. Like it could be the tiniest thing. And I just completely panic. Like, you know how you get those ulcers in your mouth because you like eat too many strawberries or something. I'm like, okay,
yes,
I have mouth cancer. This is it.
Right.
You know, and then like eventually it goes away. I'm like, oh my God, my body's a miracle. But I'm surprised every time. And I still have this health anxiety because things will still come up. I'm getting older. Like my body's not the same and weird stuff happens and I freak out, but now I know what it is and I can, and I still get the anxiety and the terrible feeling that is so familiar to me, Nicole, but it doesn't last as long and it's not chronic. You know, it's like, I can't escape, I don't think ever from my, that's the way I am, but at least it's not like ruling my life anymore with fear.
Yes, I love that. I'm a big follower of Ram Dass. Do you follow his work?
So I do. And my husband just read his book, Being Ram Dass, because my sister just sent it to him. So I'm going to read it. But yeah.
Oh my God.
I know a little bit.
If you're into energy and spiritual stuff, you're going to just love him. To me, he is just like the greatest gift. But what he says about his neuroses, because he started out as a PhD social psychologist at Harvard, and then he went through his psychedelic drug experience, which led him to India, which led him to his deep, deep spiritual experience and being named Ram Dass by his guru. Anyway, but what he says about his neuroses is that he, over all the years of doing all the spiritual work that he did, which was a lot, he said, I never got rid of one neurosis, but they no longer rule my life. Now they're just little schmooze and I invite them in for tea. And that's like exactly what you're saying.
Yes. I mean, that's, gosh, where I would like to be, and I hope to someday. But, I love that. There's another thing that was a really important part of like the healing journey, a piece that you gave me and I want to share with people about the inner child work. That's something that I wasn't familiar with until I found your work and didn't know about. But like I said, I was really good at the doing the work part. So it came pretty naturally. And I think why that was so important for me is because you know, I think when we journal speak, and especially if we have a lot of anger, about childhood stuff, and like you always say, how it's like the gray area that, or the conflict that causes the pain, or whatever that thing is that you always say, that's so true.
It's the conflict. Yes, it's if you feel all the one way about something, or all another way. Yeah.
So I was kind of stuck in that. I knew all about the conflict I felt, and I was like really stuck in that for many years. And like, I just, you know, I couldn't get past certain things. Right. And I think that the inner child work brought in a new piece for me, which was going back and listening to her it made it all about me, I guess. And I was able to let go of like, and actually see my caregivers as children themselves, you know, and it was, so it was like, we were all innocent in a way. It was really helpful to be able to get out of that stuck place of sort of like you feel like a victim and you're blaming, like, well, this is all because of my childhood or whatever. It was like I was able to move past that with the inner child work because I was able to see everybody as who we really are, which is just, you know, children stuck in adult bodies, reliving that stuff and doing the best we can. But then it made me feel empowered because I'm like, and it wasn't like to minimize my caregivers at all, love them, but, and they did the best they could, but I am the one who can do the best for me now. Like I am all I need now. And I guess that's what I want everybody to know. Like you have all the tools that you need, and it may mean going to a practitioner or going to a doctor if that's what you feel called to do, but you are making the choice. Like your intuition is going to tell you in each moment what is best for you. And if you don't know the answer, then forget about it for a few days, or ask the question on the message board, or ask your friends. That's what that stuff's for. But eventually you're going to know what to do, because so many people I see are just like, what do I do? You know? So that was something that I learned through that inner child stuff.
Yeah. And the inner child work, guys out there, if you have not taken advantage of that, I have a retreat that you can purchase on my website. It's not expensive. It can take you through all the work under retreat recordings. It's called the Inner Child Retreat. Please do it. It is life-changing, this work. And similar to like things that people don't always take seriously, like self-compassion and forgiveness, inner child work, it's powerful. It changes your neuropathways. It changes your emotional reactions to things. It changes your ability to get triggered. It's right. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's really important for the loving kindness towards yourself. Like, it's almost like a requirement to be able to feel that, because I certainly had never had those types of feelings towards myself, which I think most adults really don't, unless you've done this deep work. And I think that talk therapy just has a ceiling to it. Like, I don't think that I think that it's helpful and it has a place, but it's not going to get you down deep, because you're still, you know, you're not getting to the subconscious level of your mind in talk therapy. EMDR was really helpful for me. That got me really deep really quickly, and I was able to discover a lot through that too. So that's kind of what inner child work feels like in a way, because you're going down all these different levels inside of yourself. And it takes practice and patience with yourself to get there and to feel those things.
So a question for you. In the by and by, you mentioned that it was just as terrifying to call your husband and ask for help as it was to have what you thought might be a heart attack. How are you doing with that?
Oh, much better. Oh, yes. It's a new Jess. It's a new world where I not only ask for help, but I state my needs.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's a whole new world for me, and it's much better for everybody. Yeah.
That's amazing, because you know what? Especially women, my ladies out there, we are scared to inconvenience others with our needs.
Yes.
And that is something that I always am seeking to raise awareness around and to change. So Jessica, I am really considering this wholeheartedly a success story. You seem like you're in a great place. And remember, there's no cure for the human condition. So you're always going to feel something. But I think you have the best mindset and you know what to do. So I will ask you the question I ask all of my interviewees, which is, you are looking out on a sea of people, many of whom could be suffering on your worst day. Maybe with depression, maybe with pain, maybe with long haul, maybe with anxiety. What is your best advice and message you'd want to give to that person?
Wow. What I kind of tell myself on my worst days is just remember that these feelings, whether it's physical or emotional, it will not last forever. It's going to change into something else. And if you can really let yourself feel the pain and the emotions, then the thing that's on the other side is actually sort of the opposite of that, which is joy and happiness and contentment and things that I have been feeling lately more and more that I just thought were gone forever, you know, at one point when I was at my lowest low. So I always would tell myself just to keep going and don't give up. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. So that's another way to say this too shall pass, because it always does. And it feels permanent in the moment. And so to just remember that this too shall always pass is so, so important.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Yes, it was my pleasure. It was so great to talk to you, Nicole. After all these months, I'm glad we got to speak in real life.
Yes, absolutely. All right, guys. Well, I am sure you got a ton out of this wonderful conversation with Jessica. I hope you did. And as always, this is Nicole Sachs. Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. It always helps people to find it. And this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.